Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Football Friday. Presented by Seneca Buffalo Creek Casino. Nothing else comes close. And by Topps Markets Grocery Delivery. Order online while you enjoy the game. Sal, will this game, as Sal Capaccio joins us, the music said so, be enjoyable? Is it will it be possible, just even with all the accoutrements from Topps and so on? Last week's game was difficult to enjoy. Will this be different?
I'm not sure. I think it all depends on how the quarterback plays. If you gave Bills fans a choice, and I think you guys have been kind of talking about this. I don't know exactly how you phrased it, but I've heard a little bit of this. If you gave Bills fans a choice, they could either lose this game, but have Josh Allen look really good and really like, wow, we might have something here, or win this game and come away going, I'm still not seeing what I hope to see. I think more Bills fans might want to choose the former.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what this game comes down to and what it's about here for Buffalo Bills fans. Ideal scenario is he plays well, they win. But I think more than anything, at the top of the list is Josh Allen looks good, looks competent, and gives me hope.
My gosh, Mike read off Kelly's debut stats.
Against the Jets?
290-some yards, huh. 3 touchdowns, no picks. They lost the game.
I mean, take that, baby. Well, yeah,
I might even let you like shave a bit of my, not that it would matter. I'll give a little bit of my pinky. Like,
right.
Fine.
You know,
what do I got to do?
I actually was thinking about today. I would take the 86 season in a heartbeat, and they went 4-12.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you would, right? If because of how he looked, and then you think about the other side of the ball, they had Bruce in his second year. Here you have Tremaine Edmonds in his first year. Like, there's just some young guys coming around, but if you got the 86 season here, I think people would be really excited about that, even only after 4 wins. It sounds weird, but everything was about how good Kelly looked and some of those young players.
That's a really interesting thought. It's too long ago for me to know, but I think you never would have worried in those days about losing your guys. You never would have thought
right.
Your clock was ticking.
That's true, too.
Right?
Yeah.
And now you do have that.
Mm-hmm. But you can also get other guys.
I mean, That's right. But I don't know. I don't want to think too hard about it. That year was a lot of close losses, but you could tell that you had a guy who could really play, and you had Bruce Smith and Andre Reed and Daryl Talley on the team already, like you said, and you kind of knew a little bit about who those guys were back then. I remember it. I remember just being like almost week to week. They really lost this way again? Like, it was just sort of late interceptions and
right.
late problems and close games.
Yeah, it feels to me like this is one of these things that you probably conflate into being more prominent than it was, but I feel like a linebacker on the hash marks was like a blind spot for Kelly. Like, there'd just be this
yes.
throw, like, not
over the middle.
Yeah, not just like, oh, how did he not see that guy?
Like, that, and he's the tall guy, too, right Kelly?
Like,
but you're
guy,
right.
Right.
He that hurt him a few times. He had that late interception over the middle more than once that those first couple years, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it'd be very, very good if Josh Allen were good here and just were always good, you know? Like, I think I would pick win the game because the game you're describing is coming anyway. Like, there's going to be games when I wouldn't let this game convince me that he won't be good.
I get it.
So I don't want to let it be able to convince me
that he will
be good.
You can't get the win back, but you could still get Josh Allen to look good, right? I mean,
yeah.
if you lose the game, that's lost forever, and you're 0-2. But if you win the game and Josh Allen doesn't look very good, you could still have him look good next week.
Right.
So I get that part of it. I just think fans going into this game, the story is Josh Allen. The story is not 0-1. How do we get to 1-1? I think that really is what it comes down to.
Part of what made Sunday so upsetting for fans is like everything was bad.
Yeah.
They couldn't stop them. They couldn't cover. They couldn't
They had horrible special teams plays.
Like the three more running back touchdowns against them. Pass protection. No first downs for more than a half. I mean, unreal. So what he is, it'll be hard to know for a while. This game will not tell us definitively what he is as a player. It'll just be a peak. But he's also got a situation here, Sal, and you know, tell us if we shouldn't be really sort of worried for him that a lot of what's going on around him is below average.
I don't know if you should be worried for him. I think that the expectation shouldn't be very high, though, because of what's going on around him. And I think you have to really understand that going into the game. Like, if he's able to elevate their level of play, then that's saying something, you know, because he had to do that at Wyoming. You really look back, people talk about, you know, how his stats were at Wyoming, and he couldn't, you know, the good ones are supposed to carry everyone. He still made them better than they were. They were just so bad that much better still wasn't good enough, you know, to resonate. You'd like to see him at some point, you know, raise the level of play for these guys because, yeah, I think he's working with a subpar group at wide receiver overall. There are definitely issues on the offensive line that need to be somehow covered up or taken care of. But I don't know if I'd say worried, Mike. I mean, I guess if you're talking about his health and taking shots, that's on him, too. He's got to get rid of the ball, things like that. I do think, though, the level of expectation should be a little bit lower knowing all that.
Yeah, I'm basically at Sal. I mean, I hate to be overly dramatic. I want the game to come and go and not go on the air at 4:10 or whenever we'll get on the air for postgame going, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah.
What now? What do we do now? Avoid that. Like, get me, this is basically the same recipe I had for like the Bengal preseason game when he was going to start.
Yeah.
Give me a couple of good plays. Give me some flash of what it is that got you drafted. And if I get as many bad plays as that, fine. I'll be able to leave the game going, okay, well, just work on getting rid of the bad ones. And, you know, the good ones, I'll take those and hold them close and hope that I, you know, get more of those. Like, that's the bar for me, which is embarrassingly low.
I think most Bills fans are probably in that boat. I was on a station in Kansas City today, and they asked me, like, is this what was kind of expected? You know, What did you think coming into the year? What did Bills fans, was the question to me. And I said, you know, I think that as we got closer to the year, the majority of fans that I heard from or talked to or whatever, they did kind of expect the team to maybe take a step back. And the way I phrased it was, I think what fans are starting to realize that this could really kind of be year one 2.0, which is how Albert Breer defined it when he wrote a Monday Morning Quarterback piece a few weeks ago. Year one 2.0. Maybe last year was supposed to be this year, but things got off to a good start. They had some things rolling. They said, let's trade for Kelvin Benjamin, and you know, they made the playoffs. And now maybe we're getting what many thought should have happened a year ago.
How much? Now, we don't know what the season is in full yet, obviously, but you know, that one game was pretty terrible. How much of what you see them being is defensible to you? Right. So McDermott is talking about more about the process and more about, you know, the right move and what I think is in the way he sounds, which isn't worth everything. The way he sounds, it's all sort of by design. What has happened here? Or what is happening here? And, you know, at some point, this team could use rebuilding. Like you can make some argument here that, you know, different examples, some are accidental and some are purposeful, but you can make some argument here that the step back is called for, that they should be thinking like, all right, well, Josh Allen serves well enough as a microcosm of this. We'll dump Tyrod Taylor and draft a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is like a microcosm of a rebuilding project. I just wonder, like, so how much of all this is really defensible, what they're doing, and how much of it is, no, you should not be this bad, you should not have this problem, etc. How do you look at that?
Well, I'll first say, I don't think they're nearly as bad as what they showed last week. I just think last week was such a bad game. I don't expect that to happen again. I don't think they are what they showed last week. So many things went wrong in that game, and then they snowballed on top of each other, and the weather was bad, and all that kind of stuff. They should be better in certain areas than they are, like the offensive line. Look, and I've said this, they had not many options when everything happened with the O-line. Eric Wood, Richie Incognito. But I do think that they should have maybe planned a little bit better for it, understood maybe what you're having on offense, how to protect against that, whatever. However that may be, maybe we'll see that this week. I don't know if I can give... To me, it's indefensible how the defense played last week, the secondary. Like, that's supposed to be the backbone of your team. You're building the team based on your strength. When McDermott got here, he said, I'm going to build this team on corners who can tackle and be physical. And he got a good secondary last year, and now they took a step back. Like, that to me is, there's no excuse for that. They have to be better than they were. If that's the strength of your team, they should be better. The wide receiver group, more than the O-line. And again, I can give the O-line an understandable, they should be playing better, but... I understand why that happened the way it did. The wide receiver group we've been talking about for a year and a half, 2 years. Mm-hmm. I mean that we have over a year. Like, what is that group? Ever since they got rid of Sammy, basically.
Even while Watkins was here, it was like, who else is here?
Right, but you know, you had guys that could play. They weren't always on the field, but
yep.
You know, Robert Woods, mm-hmm. and Marquise Goodwin.
That's right.
Right, yeah. You had guys like that. But after Sammy left, you kind of looked at the wide receiver group and said, okay. What happened with them was, what bothers me about that is, even in settings, like whether it's an owner's meeting or down at the Senior Bowl or whatever, when they would talk about, yeah, we understand, like, we will always be looking to upgrade that position. There's always guys that come available. There would seem to be an acknowledgement from the organization that that was a weak group, and I still don't think that they've done enough to improve it.
Right. No.
So to me, that's damning.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I know they didn't plan on Eric Wood leaving the team. That was January or February. I mean, they had the whole offseason to do something about it. It might just be that they miscalculated how much they could count on Ryan Groy, if indeed they can't. And, you know, the early returns are bad. That doesn't mean it will go that way. He is a player that looked pretty credible a couple of years ago when he had to fill in for Wood. But it's gotten off to a pretty rough start, preseason and this game last Sunday.
I think the problem with that is, and you're right about that, Bulldog, but the offensive line, you look at free agency. I mean, unless you were going to spend $60 million.
Sure.
And I just don't think they were interested in doing that. I wouldn't advocate for it. I just think it's a position you don't need to really do that. But you look at some of the guys and what they signed. And then center is such a unique kind of spot. They did get Russell Bodine, and, I mean, he's not great shakes, but he started 4 years in the league, and they said, we can get by with this guy until we find something else. So that's why I understand where you're coming from, but I think it was hard on the O-line because there just wasn't a lot of options unless you were really willing to spend a ton of money. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wide receiver, I was just looking. Opening day last year was Matthews, Zay Jones, and Holmes. And Watkins started camp with them and was traded. The rest of those guys were all dismissed one way or another, right?
Yeah.
Woods went to free agency. Goodwin, I feel like, organizationally, they kind of gave up on. But I think maybe a lot of teams would have done the same thing. He'd been hurt. Yeah. And Hogan, there was a contract that was matched. New England made a move, right? And picked up Chris Hogan.
He was an RFA.
They're all different stories. They started last year with Matthews was on 1 year and was a mediocre player. Jones is the interesting one. Jones was a guy that they were really, like, they invested in him with how they drafted him.
Traded up.
That has not worked out. Say almost nothing at all, that has not worked out. So,
on or off the field, obviously.
Right. I mean,
so far.
That has gone terribly.
And then Kelvin Benjamin has not gone very well so far.
And then Benjamin comes later. You know, they do that. And that hasn't amounted really to anything either. Free agency this year, there were, you know, certain guys you could have gone for. Mike Wallace is the first guy I think of, but it's not like he's great.
And I do think, and I've brought this up to you guys before, according to being on a podcast, John Brown said the Bills offered him a contract. He said he chose to go to Baltimore. It was between Buffalo and Oakland, and at the end, Baltimore came in. He was going to go to Oakland even. He was on a podcast and said that. So they did.
Well,
a little shopping.
You know, guys that went to Baltimore, including Snead, Ryan Grant, who was in Baltimore, and then they pretended, or whatever they did, to get out of it because Crabtree was available.
Like, right.
They ended up going to Indianapolis. Those guys, I believe it. I believe that anybody could look at the Bills and think, what are you going to do here? I mean, you want to address that. But guys don't have to want to do it. I mean, whether that's on or off the field, that's the quarterback position. Who knows? How good is it for a wide receiver?
Receiver you don't have to,
needs a quarterback.
You can't force them to take your money. That's a great point you made. So I think the next part of this, Mike, is if you want Josh Allen to be really good, you get him somebody. He's got to get somebody in here. You got to give him somebody. I mean, look, I don't think Andy Dalton's a great quarterback. Did you see what AJ Green did for him last night? I mean, come on, right? And he's been doing that. They came in the league together. They were drafted round one and round two in 2011, and they've made a career together. That's an elite wide receiver. It would be nice for Josh Allen to have a guy like that. And I know AJ Greens don't grow on trees. I understand that. But it would be nice if Josh Allen could have that guy, just his money guy, to rely on. AJ Green has made Andy Dalton a ton of money in this league. Now he's on his second contract, maybe even third, whatever.
No,
it
Dalton's
is.
On his second contract.
His second, but
well, you can't go back, but I at the risk of being too pessimistic about this, if I were the Bills, I would think that the draft is like almost 100% what I need to do to address that.
It might be.
That doesn't have to mean trading up for Watkins, you know, the next round of that necessarily. It stings that was such a good wide receiver draft, and they traded up for him, and he's gone already. You know, they totally missed that in the end. They got a little bit out of him, but, you know, you wanted to do better.
And there's no rule says you can't go high two picks in a row, whatever. I mean, until you get it. The Packers this year drafted two corners in the first round. I mean, they said, we need corners, and they drafted two corners in the first round. I mean, if that's what it takes for the Bills, you know, that is a position they have to start thinking about. Because they got to think about their quarterback. It's not just, you know, how teams play them, and we need LeSean McCoy a little more room because we got a fast guy on the outside. It's, I got this guy, this quarterback, that I'm investing so much in over the next 5 years. I got to get him somebody. How are we going to get him?
Right. Is it worth it all? We've talked a little bit about Corey Coleman here this week, too. I mean, New England signs him, and, you know, we'll see. Maybe he ends up contributing absolutely nothing to them. But even before Sunday came and went, and they looked as bad as they looked, I thought it was at least reasonable to consider whether or not the Bills, whatever was going on with Corey Coleman, knowledge of the offense, attitude, whatever it was, considering what their depth chart at that position looks like and the talent that got him drafted 15th overall in the first place, is it reasonable to say they should have just put their heads down and just hoped that that would turn out?
I think it's reasonable, but look, he also was on an 0-16 team, and they didn't want him on his own rookie deal, right? I mean, there's something going on there. I think what it came down to for a guy like Corey Coleman is, we can do that, at what expense? Because if we keep doing this and we keep ramming our head against the wall, he never gets it, who are we not developing? Who are we not putting out there? Why are we wasting our time? No doubt, Bulldog, they could have done that. They could stick with it. I think the question just became, for them, how long are we willing to stick with it, and what if it just doesn't work out? Then we're really wasting our time. I don't want to waste my time. I got Ray McLeod I drafted. I got Robert Foster, who I'm keeping on the roster. Basically, I like him. I think Robert Foster had a lot to do with that. They kept an undrafted free agent. And I don't know this. My sense would be they felt they'd be wasting their time developing them because they're not sure he would ever become anything.
Corey Coleman. You know what I need then? I certainly understand that. But those guys you named are not prospects. It sounds like Peterman to me. He's not really a legitimate NFL prospect, Ray McLeod. You know, he's a late pick. Coleman is a first-round pick from 2 years ago. You know, I'm here to say put the time in. But, you know, what's their thing? And I don't want to – you certainly rein me in if you think you need to. But what's their thing? Like, did Coleman pay attention? Did he say yes, sir, no, sir? Like, did he do the things that they stand for and the kind of stuff that, you know, most of the time, not to really stereotype, the low round pick is going to do because they need to do it to be in the league. And I got a guy here who was the best receiver in college football 3 years ago. And the Bills are like, no. In the playbook, how much time did he have? Did he have 3 weeks? You didn't say that now, but people talk about him like, well, he didn't have the plays. He was barely on the field, and he was not even here a month. So,
well, there was still a certain benchmark I think they needed him to get to, and I wonder if he ever even got there.
I don't
think they expected him to know the playbook like, you know, Zay Jones would.
I got a theory on Corey Coleman. I don't know this to be true, but I wouldn't rule it out. They traded for him, and there was that Adam Schefter, after weighing his options, he's going to Buffalo. He didn't have any options. He could have quit football or gone to Canada or played in Ryan Fitzpatrick's Finnish League from the roast.
And then Mary Kay Cabot had her report, too.
Which was?
Mary Kay Cabot said they didn't like his attitude from the moment he got there, which I'd never heard anything like that. That was her report from Cleveland.com.
Well,
I have nothing to back that up or corroborate any of that. All I know is that she said something about his attitude being poor the minute he got here.
If Coleman or his agent, which is probably who Adam Schefter, one or the other, is who Adam Schefter is talking to, are already, from the moment he's traded, he's weighing his options, or the day after, he's weighing his options. He had no options. It's reasonable to think Corey Coleman was like this. No. I'm not giving it up for them. I'll get cut, and then I'm the Biletnikoff winner from 2015, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have a chance somewhere else.
And he gets signed by Tom Brady.
Like, that's maybe John Brown a little bit. That maybe is Corey Coleman a little bit. I don't know if these things happen, but I believe it is fair to think that a wide receiver could look at the Buffalo Bills and go, come on. What chance do I have? Even Benjamin. I don't know. People are talking about like whether Benjamin is trying.
Well, I think the example you're looking for might be Anquan Boldin.
There's another one. I mean, that lasted right, how
I mean,
long?
I mean, we don't know, but it seemed like he was all on board, and then suddenly he got here, and he's like, I don't want to be here, right? And yeah, and I respect that. Higher purpose, higher calling, whatever, but then suddenly he wanted to come back in the league later,
go
right?
Go play in New England, right?
Right.
Well, reportedly sitting in a meeting next to his team's owner who doesn't know his name.
Well, said his name wrong. Probably knows it. Maybe can't pronounce it correctly. I don't know.
Okay.
But the point is that you're right. Some of these guys may say, "Why am I? Who's your quarterback? And right. what am I doing to my career?
Right.
By going there?
How am I going to reclaim? You know, I'm not going to make a name for myself here.
Well, you know how you fix that? Be good, Josh Allen.
Right.
Be you good. Need, right. That's how you fix it.
Right.
You got to draft guys and force them to come here.
You do, or you have to put out a respectable enough offense with your quarterback looking attractive enough
right.
that next offseason, John Brown and whoever that's a free agent goes, yeah, you know, I can make that work. I'll go Alshon Jeffrey. I'll go there for a year and just mm-hmm. and see just because this looks like it might be a good place to go. But there's a lot that has to go into that. Your offense has to look like it has potential. And we're nowhere near that right now.
Our Friday roundtable continues with Sal Capaccio through the hour. Mike Shope and the Bulldog here on WGR.
I mean, he's a really smart player already. Great rookie. I think he's preparing to come in and, you know, learn
just
how to be a pro. He's taking that approach. He learns, executes every day. He learns something new. I think about reading the defense. You know, you can tell that he's just growing as a quarterback. He has a great arm. You know, he's a great leader. He's just a great guy to be in a position to come out and, you know, try to lead the team to get a victory.
Hi.
Hey, Mike, now you're on.
Hold on a second.
And another thing about...
I'll have to wait on the rest of that. Marcus Murphy was on WGR this morning, running back. You think he's the number two running back?
I do now. It seemed like at least last week, but who knows? Again, I keep saying like everything was so weird last week. I don't know what to believe and what not to about what they were doing, what they weren't doing, how much of the playbook they're showing personnel-wise. He was the number two running back last week, though. I mean, he went in more often. He had more snaps and more carries and more touches than Chris Ivory.
And 11 special team snaps versus 0 for Ivory. 23-11 to 7-0.
Marcus Murphy had 205 all-purpose yards last week for the Bills. Did you know that?
No.
He did. He had 205 all-purpose yards.
All those kickoffs?
Yeah, because they were kicking off
right,
all the time.
Right.
He's taking it out, and he had a couple of nice ones. He's a good player. Before we go on, Willie Totten, I heard your discussion earlier.
Yes.
His claim to fame is?
Well, there are a few. He was Jerry Rice's
That's right.
quarterback.
That's how I always
the
know
The field at Mississippi Valley State is Rice Totten Field.
I did not realize that. Very nice. His senior year was over 5,000 yards passing. Jerry Rice had close to 1,200 yards.
So you were listening for that list?
I heard a little bit about Willie Totten.
Okay.
And about, the 13 quarterbacks?
Yes.
I saw your tweet today, and I heard you talk a little bit about it on the way in.
13 quarterbacks between Jim Kelly and Josh Allen made their first NFL start for the Bills. And the three different ones during the 87 strike are included on that list, including Willie Totten.
And I knew Brian McClure is the other one.
Brian McClure and Dan Minucci.
I did not. I would have. I know Dan Minucci. I wouldn't have thought of him, though.
He was a backup in the late 70s for the Bills and maybe came out of retirement for the first strike game in 87.
Right.
I'm not even sure he made it through the three games, but he was relieved in the first game against the Colts. Totten. I want to mention this again from Mark Dalton, who texted from Arizona that, at least as far as Mark knows, and I didn't see different, Totten holds the record for most fumbles.
Did you guys look that up?
No.
Okay.
Most fumbles in a Bills game, and he also has second place, and he only played two games. He had 9 fumbles in 2 games.
Well, if there's a fumbled center exchange, it goes on the quarterback.
If there's a quarterback running back fumble, it goes on the quarterback.
So obviously, I mean, Dave Craig has the most fumbles in NFL history, I believe, unless he was passed by somebody. I think he might have been passed by somebody.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Who was it?
Nathan Peterman.
I'm so sorry to his.
Which brings us to Nathan Peterman.
I'm sorry to his family. I'm sorry to everyone.
Sal, what explains what happens to Nathan Peterman on the field? Like, what do the Bills think? You know, we brought up nervousness to Sean McDermott on Monday,
and he didn't
say no.
Yeah, he didn't deny it. I don't know.
Like, Peterman was not a top prospect, and for the most part, I think to the league in general or to fans in general, it's like, what are you doing, Bills? But they have to think, from watching him the rest of the time, that he'll do a way better job than what he's done in these 2 games. They just have to think that, especially this one. I mean, he didn't have the 5 interceptions this time, but it was messier to me than L.A. It was, like, worse to me than L.A. No first downs, like, almost nothing good happened. So where's the right money? Where's the smart money on, like, how to explain him?
I'm throwing darts at a dartboard here without, you know, blindfolded. I don't know. So I think that for me it comes down to he just doesn't want to make a mistake, and that basically is paralysis by analysis in his own brain, if that makes sense, right? Like, in preseason and camp, at times, like, I would say he's aggressive, man. Like, he's kind of a gunslinger. Like, he's willing to throw the ball and make mistakes. And, you know, in L.A. last year, he kind of was, actually, in a way. But he was getting beat up, but he just made bad decisions, too. I just think maybe once he gets on the field, he's so worried about maybe looking over his job. Hey, it's my first. I don't want to lose the job. I got the job. I don't know about nerves, but trying to do either too much or too little, however you want to slice that. Yeah, there is something that has to happen in his brain that I think causes that to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's so fast, right? Like a lot of any criticism that we, any of us, would have gotten for being hard on Peterman for the Chargers game last year would be, well, what's he supposed to do? He's getting hit. It's not all his fault. Well, yeah, sure, when it goes off Pat DeMarco's hands and gets intercepted, I agree, it's not his fault. And, yes, I'd like guys to block better, but you are the guy with the ball in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to gauge whether you have time to make that throw or not.
It's part of the job.
You get credit for standing in there and delivering it and taking a hit. What I don't think you get credit for is trying to throw it and getting hit as you're throwing it and having it pop up in the air and get intercepted. Like, that's on you.
That's right.
You got to pull that down and eat it if you don't have time. So the computer in your head has got to be like, I can do this. And, you know, that's the speed of the game.
Not many people can do it well.
No, it's extremely hard. But, I mean,
he has physical limitations, but it's not those physical limitations that have done him in. That's the thing about it, right? I mean, the one interception in L.A. is he threw the ball on the sideline, and that was – but even to me, it wasn't even necessarily the lack of arm strength there. That might have been just reading it too soon and going to him too soon. The physical limitations aren't what have caused this. It's more, to me, up top. It's more above the shoulders, something that's going on in the head, in the brain, the way he's processing things, the way he's thinking about the game, translating it from practice to a game, and it's just different for him. And I don't know the answer to that. I've used the example, I think, in all of our lives, in some way, shape, or form, if you work in any pressure industry, any type of pressure career, you've probably, if you're listening out there, run into somebody who's kind of like that. Like, you're just really good when you're around them in a regular setting, but when the chips are down, I'll use the word that Colin Cowherd always uses. I like this. He always says, I want my quarterback good in crisis. Like, that's the best guys are the best in crisis.
Right.
And Nathan Peterman just isn't good in crisis, I guess.
Right. You want to stay tuned at 6 o'clock to hear picks, to hear somebody that's when the chips are down, the pressure's on. You just listen to me at 6 o'clock with NFL picks.
Why is the pressure on you?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
You're ahead.
It's picks. I mean, it's important. There's money involved. Not really. Yeah. Not. Don't gamble.
If by when the pressure's on, you mean all plays, yes, I agree. Like he has struggled. And I think he should be gone. I mean, with due respect, the guy might be just like a lot of things Sean McDermott likes. He almost has to be, but I don't want to have the possibility that he starts more games for the Bills, really. Like, there are at least comparable options, if not clearly better options, available on the market. And, you know, I don't want to either predict that they'll want to give Josh Allen a break at any point. I'd be against that almost in every scenario here. But, you know, you want to, in any situation, have options, and right now the Bills have two, and one of them is Nathan Peterman. Like, I don't know. I just would replace him.
I think to that point, Josh Allen has to have the longest leash of anybody right now, right? I mean, you're sticking with him, as you just said, for no matter what, almost.
The thing is, Allen always should have been the most important thing, the top priority, and not that it will necessarily matter, because if he's good, he's good, and it won't matter. Won't even be remembered. But they cannot tell you that they had a philosophy or a strategy for him ever. They did not put him in because we're not afraid. They did not leave him out because we think he needs to watch. They did neither of those things. They made Nathan Peterman their priority. And they traded A.J. McCarron because They were willing to do that. I mean, they were willing to have Allen be the backup. And here it was the third quarter of the first game, and McDermott felt he had no other move. I think that's what happened there, than to put him in and extending into this week. So I think a good organization makes that trade. You know, people criticize it, whatever, you don't care. This is what you believe in. This player is who you believe in, Josh Allen. This is what we're going to do. And then the rest of what you do is about him. And the Bills did not do that. And he's sort of just like a passenger in this process. And now he's on the field. And I don't even know if they want him to be.
Well, I disagree in the regard that I don't think they wanted him to play this year or didn't plan on him playing this year. I think they really wanted him to sit as long as he had to. But just never thought it would come this soon.
That's what I'm saying. Part, right? That's what I'm saying.
But they did have a plan, I think. The plan was just going to have him sit back, you know, learn it. And that's why there wasn't the priority to build around him this year. But as we go on, we'll do that. But we're not going to need to. And now your hand is forced. I know that's your point, but I do think they had a plan. It's just the plan went completely awry.
The plan, if that was the plan, if I'm to respect that, that ended when they traded McCarron. They had McCarron on their roster. He wasn't hurt. So if you had to have a fifth-round pick, I don't criticize them for that trade, but if the plan was, like, we're okay now, like, there's just no way Nathan Peterman will do that poorly. What a miss. And McCarron was on the team.
And of course, Peterman could have been hurt, and Allen would have had to go in. So if they didn't want him to play right away, they didn't leave themselves any option. You know,
that's,
I mean,
right.
Anything could have happened.
But he probably showed that he at least could be capable of playing, right, not necessarily starting. But I always, to me, as you guys know, I always brought up the possibility of only two quarterbacks being here, right?
Yep.
And to me, it was here's the reason why I kept thinking this. And this is what I think the heart of what your question comes down to, Mike, of why they did it, is, and I've said this before, that if you keep three, what do you do with Allen every week? Like, what is his role?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, because if you keep
third.
Then how?
For me, he's first, but if that's what you do in this scenario,
correct,
he's third.
If that's what you do, then he's third. And to me, they never wanted him to be just a scout team practice guy all week long. They wanted him to get his reps to develop, maybe running the second team, getting in there. And then when the opportunity presented itself in games, to play him. But you can't do that if he's third because he's inactive on game day.
Well,
nobody's going
to
do that.
It's a little bit rigid. I mean, you would have had to come up with a new way of looking at it. And
right.
Maybe they're all active and you don't have one more guy to cover kicks that go out of the end zone.
I get it.
You know, like, you just have a new way of doing it. But they just, you know, whatever. I don't think it was necessarily whimsical, but Allen should have been, my point is, and you know, you heard me, should have been the priority within all this. And he looks like a passenger. in the process.
He's driving the car now.
That's yeah. Yeah, like the
as Kelvin Benjamin said,
the other guy fell out of the car, so he has to take the wheel. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, with Sal Capaccio on our Football Friday roundtable. This is WGR.
All right, a couple of things here. First, we want to hook somebody up with a pair of tickets to go see the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. The show is Saturday, December 15th. You've got time to mark your calendars if you win these tickets. The performance is at 7:30.
I suppose you're right about that.
KeyBank Center, minimum value of the prize is $60, courtesy of Metamorphic Concerts. General contest rules apply. Caller 5 at 644-9878 is going to take that prize. The other thing is that we want to mention Tops, one of the sponsors here of our Football Friday coverage, the roundtable and all of it. And they were nice enough to bring by a couple of fantastic recipes that you can find at topsmarkets.com today. They had a delicious pork enchilada chili, which we sampled while we were doing a Facebook Live appearance, which was a first for me, actually appearing on a Facebook Live video. I've shot some in my attic.
I've also never had chili.
Wow.
First time ever eating chili.
Nice. Thank you to Tops for that. And we also had cookie pizza.
Yes, I like the cookie pizza a lot.
Both of these items are delicious and are available for you with great ingredients that you can get delivered by Tops, Tops Friendly Markets, topsmarkets.com. Information on that available at their website.
You know what the cookie pizza is? It's like a cheesecake you can pick up.
Oh, it's nice.
A thicker
little strawberries
bottom.
And blueberries on there.
I like a thicker bottom.
Nice sour cream icing that had a little cheesecake zing to it. It was very nice. One other thing I want to tell you about Tops, they want to give you $10 off your first order if you start using their home delivery. So enter the promo code TOPSWGR at checkout. If you go to the website and find out how to get food delivered to your home from Tops, you'll get $10 off your first online order. Again, that's at topsmarkets.com.
Sal, Philip Rivers.
So in my 4 years in one game being on the Bills sideline, there are very few people, a select few, that I have just been really in awe of watching play. Philip Rivers is one of them. First time I ever watched him play was the 2014 game here, my first year on the sidelines. He is just really, really good. He's special. He's special. And he's bigger than you think.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, when you're down there on the field, you notice it. And you see the command of everything he has, the respect he gets. I am a big Philip Rivers fan. I've always been, going back to his NC State days. Started as a freshman at NC State. I remember that. Really wanted the Bills to be able to draft him, obviously. It didn't work out that year.
He's also never missed a game.
He's so durable. And no, even though he doesn't move, right? He's not that mobile. He just sits back there and throws darts. So, Philip Rivers, that's what I have to say about him. I mean, he might need that Super Bowl to get into the Hall of Fame, but he certainly is, to me, as good as some quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame. He needs to be in certain consideration.
He's had a fantastic career, and if there's ever going to be a guy that gets into the Hall of Fame playing quarterback that doesn't go to a Super Bowl,
that's right.
Like he's you know, Dan Fouts is in the Hall of Fame, and he never went to a Super Bowl. So
same organization
does
too. Yeah.
Same organization. I think Rivers has been great. Sal, we have to get to building the game plan here during our roundtable, which is brought to you by 84 Lumber, your hometown building partner since 1956. Josh Allen starts his first NFL game. How do I want to build the game plan?
I think you have to rely on LeSean McCoy in this game much more than 7 carries he had last game. I think it was 7 carries he had total, 7 touches, whatever it was. Look, I know it's a cliche in football. I know it's old hat to say run the ball, but you will help your rookie quarterback if you could run the ball a little bit with him. They have a bit of a banged-up secondary. It's a bit of a younger secondary, and I think if you're running the ball and they have to worry about that, Josh Allen might have opportunities to be aggressive. So run the ball, get LeSean McCoy going, and I think that would really, really help Josh Allen's chances.
It's supposed to be beautiful out.
Oh, can't wait.
It should be great. You don't have to go to San Diego or L.A. to get 80 and sunny in this game, Bills
and
Chargers.
I don't know if they're coming in today, but typically they do.
Oh, they
I
come,
know Anthony,
yep.
But Anthony Lynn, I don't know, new head coach, but typically the Chargers have come east on Friday, not on Saturday.
Well, I will go find their hotel and wake them up then.
There you go.
And little known fact, they drive it.
Yeah, right. Everybody.
Not many people know
own
that.
Cars,
the Chargers,
by the way.
The Chargers, they all take their own cars. They drive it. They left on
they
left on Tuesday to get here by today. Thank you, Sal.
You're welcome, guys.
Cannonball run.
The Bills have beaten Philip Rivers one time. It was that game in 2008 where there was a power outage and people really weren't able to watch it on TV. A very nice win for the Bills that season. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. We'll have picks and more next hour here on WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.